Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com. And by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, more protests supporting both Palestine and Israel pop up at colleges nationwide as students at Princeton University occupy the campus for a second day.
The morale right now is really good, and we're committed to staying here until divestment.
Plus, Congressman Donald Payne Jr.'s death leaves a vacant seat in Congress. What's the succession plan at a critical time in the nation's capital?
You don't know, given all the crises that are going on in the world, when there might be an important vote that comes up that you don't know about. And so if that happens, you want to have that seat filled as quickly as possible.
Also, check your mailbox. The first newly designed mail-in ballots without the party line layout are arriving.
It was a scramble. We didn't know if our machine company would be able to do it.
And if you're planning a trip to Midtown Manhattan this summer, start saving your money. The congestion pricing toll goes into effect June 30th. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJ PBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Friday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. Princeton University students are now heading into their second night of protests over the war in Gaza, calling it a solidarity sit-in, choreographed with dozens of other college campuses across the U.S., where the pro-Palestinian demonstrations have sparked a revolt and hundreds of arrests. From Texas to California and the epicenter in Manhattan, higher ed administrations are in a showdown over free speech and the Israel-Hamas war. The demonstrations have now spread overseas, too, in Paris, Sydney, and Cairo. Student groups, including those at Princeton and Montclair State University, are largely calling for the same actions from their universities to cut ties with Israeli companies, academic institutions, and in some cases, the country itself. Ted Goldberg is in Princeton, where counter-protesters are now calling on the school to cut ties with Iran. Ted.
Brianna, day two of the Princeton encampment has gotten off to a quieter start, especially compared to yesterday when two graduate students were arrested in the morning for putting up a tent and then refusing to take it down. There are also more counter-protesters here today supporting Israel. The folks camping out here say they'll stay as long as it takes until Princeton divests from companies associating with Israel, with a little bit of help from the community.
I think that's been really heartening to see. That's kept us going. So many people have come out, cooked for us, brought us supplies. And so I think actually morale right now is really good, and we're committed to staying here until divestment.
This student, who requested that we don't use her name, says she's not leaving Makash Lawn anytime soon.
Just like a tree.
She's one of many students who vow not to be moved. Campus police watched on today, but did not arrest anyone, even the people who slept outside.
This is definitely the first time I have slept overnight in an outdoor space on Princeton campus. Definitely an unusual situation, but we're here in collective solidarity. We're holding this space, and it felt like a really meaningful moment of community to have so many people staying here overnight together.
These students are calling for a lot more than just divestment. They're demanding Princeton begin affiliating with Palestinian institutions, call for a ceasefire in Gaza, and end study abroad programs in Israel. Just outside the campus walls, a different group of protesters also made noise.
Not on our campus, not in our name!
Not on our campus, not in our name!
Princeton, you should be ashamed!
These folks say schools like Princeton should be ashamed of hiring professors affiliated with Iran. It's a different angle from the students at the encampment, But students like Jared Stone say there are similarities.
And with all that we're seeing across the country on various college campuses like Columbia and even Princeton, it's more important now than ever before to stand up for what is right, to stand up against the brutal, terrorist, bloody Iranian regime, and to stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder with the Iranian people at this hour of need.
This protest centers on one Princeton professor in particular.
Fire Mousavian!
Fire Mousavian!
Sayed Mousavian, who is currently under investigation by Congress for his ties with the Iranian regime and his role in the 1992 bombing of a restaurant in Berlin, Germany that targeted Iranian dissidents.
German press back then mentioned that according to the court documents, he had a role in the assassinations. But to go forward with it and to indict him was a political decision based on the relationship that existed back then between the Iranian government and European countries. Basically, that never happened.
Mousavian was never indicted, and he's denied these charges in the past. I reached out for an interview or statement for this story, and I didn't hear back. Arash Saleh is the American representative for the Democratic Party of Iranian Kurdistan, and he says people have been angry about Mousavian since he started working at Princeton 15 years ago.
We have been protesting, we have been talking to members of Congress, to members of academia, but unfortunately I don't know how he has been able to actually manage to stay here for a long time.
Some of the crowd traveled a long way to get to Central Jersey.
Who are coming from all around the country, I mean from even Nashville, upstate New York, all over the country, and they're gathered here. We believe it's imperative for such an institute that actually, because of the values they hold, to take an action and expel him as soon as possible, because otherwise what kind of example are we going to set for our future generations?
We're all in this collective effort to hold the Iranian regime accountable, to make sure that what they do and their malign influence on university campuses like Princeton is not ignored. And so we're here to hold them to account and to make sure that they hear us loud and clear.
Princeton is hearing a lot of people loud and clear these days. While the Mousavian protest only lasted a few hours, the encampment looks like it could last through the weekend, with commencement coming up on Tuesday. In Princeton, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
Funeral services for Congressman Donald Payne Jr. are being arranged for next week. The 65-year-old Essex County Democrat died on Wednesday after suffering a cardiac episode earlier this month that left him in a coma. Tributes from his friends and colleagues are continuing to pour in from across the country. Here at home, though, there are also hard conversations starting to take place about who will fill the six-term congressman's empty seat and just how long it could remain empty. Senior political correspondent David Cruz reports.
In some places, the death of a congressman is cause for pause and reflection, appreciation, and even reverence. In the 10th Congressional District of New Jersey, though, the vacancy created by the death of Donald Payne Jr. had been the subject of speculation for some time now. But unless the governor decides that there should be a special election, Payne's seat could go unfilled until January, says analyst Micah Rasmussen.
And of course, that can be a serious problem in such a tightly contested House of Representatives, which has been the case for the last two sessions, probably going to be the case again. So you don't want to leave a seat vacant for any length of time. You don't know when there's going to be a tough vote or a tight vote where every vote counts.
But filling the seat on an interim basis is, as they say, complicated. Unlike a vacancy in the U.S. Senate, the governor doesn't appoint a replacement in the case of a congressional vacancy. Brett Pugach is an election law attorney who most recently argued the groundbreaking County Line case. He says the governor does have a role to play in choosing the process of succession, if not the successor.
The governor can designate a special election, and in which case he'd have to designate a particular day for the special election, as well as a day for a special primary election, or he can designate the next general election as the date for this kind of special election for this to be filled.
The governor today said he hadn't thought about much beyond talking with and sharing condolences with the congressman's family.
We're not going to make any news until we do the rightful send-off for Don, which will be sometime next week. But yeah, I do have a decision to make, which in terms of how you proceed. I don't have a decision to make as to who. That's right. The decision by others. But exactly what this looks like. But no news to make on that today.
But the law is unclear on whether there would be a primary before the general election in November if the governor chose that date, or whether party leaders in Hudson, Union, and Essex, which make up the 10th congressional district, would select the candidate. And remember, a doubleheader election in November would A, fill what's left of Payne's term, and then B, choose the next member of Congress.
That part is a little bit unclear from the statutes, and be interesting to see, you know, how that would happen. I'd imagine there's probably a lot of pressure that's going to be put on the governor to do the first route, which is the special election route. And part of that stems from the fact that you can get the vacancy filled quicker.
Right now, Republicans have a slim 5-seat majority with 6 vacancies in the House. In the good old days, members didn't do much but campaign in the 2 months leading to Election Day. But this is a Congress where moves to vacate the Speaker can come with a minute's notice. And who knows what crises, real or imagined, members can come up with in this brave new world.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know too much about the protocols of what comes next and how that proceeds. So right now I'm going to just kind of focus in on the loss of my colleague. But look, what I will say is that in Congress we face a very slim, narrow margin between the two parties. So we have to be very careful about what next steps we do and try to make sure that we are giving the people of New Jersey the kind of representation that they deserve.
You don't know, given all the crises that are going on in the world, when there might be an important vote that comes up that you don't know about. And so if that happens, you want to have that seat filled as quickly as possible.
As for who might be in line for the seat, there is intense speculation there as well. But in deference to the family, most of the individuals mentioned chose not to comment until after the congressman is laid to rest. I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
And make sure you tune in to a special edition of Chatbox this weekend with David Cruz. He moderates a conversation with all 3 Democratic U.S. Senate candidates vying to replace the embattled senior senator Bob Menendez. Catch it Saturday night at 6 and Sunday morning at 10 on NJPBS. Mail-in ballots started going out on Monday for the upcoming June primary election. And this year, county clerks had to create multiple versions depending on a voter's party affiliation. That's because a federal judge recently eliminated use of the so-called party line ballot structure, but only for the Democratic primary. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas checked in with several county clerks as they prepare for the historic changes and got a look at the state's first ever office block ballots.
It's been hectic.
County clerks have had to scramble these last few weeks to get their ballots to match the federal court decision that abolished the county line, the ballot design that puts all the candidates endorsed by county leadership in one row. The court order came just days before the ballots were to be printed.
It was a scramble. We didn't know if our machine company would be able to do it, and they didn't know if they could do it.
What is frustrating to clerks is the fact that people don't understand how a ballot's put together. And the judge kind of inferred you just move the names around. And that's not how it works.
Our machine company services about 10 or 11 counties in New Jersey. They have a program for their machine, and it is set up to do columns, not office blocks. So they could not reprogram it. They had to work within the parameters of what they had. Now, for the actual voting machine, that's not a problem. But for the vote by mail, it's an issue because those are scanned. And that scanner has a template and also parameters and boundaries of what it can do.
Joanne Rajapi is the county clerk in Union, where she had to proof 47 different ballots for the upcoming primary because of all the different congressional, county, and municipal races in Union. But in the 19 counties that use the county line, the ballot changes only apply to Democratic candidates.
We now have 2 different ballot styles because the county line decision in federal court was limited to the Democratic primary. And the elections in June are two separate elections. So dealing with two different ballot styles, depending upon what county you're in, has been very challenging.
Mail-in ballots started going out on Monday, and they've already shipped to military members overseas. So even though he passed on Wednesday, Congressman Donald Payne Jr. will appear on this ballot.
He'll get votes, that's for sure.
Educating the public on these changes is the next big hurdle for county clerks, who are launching education campaigns in a number of ways.
For the mail-in ballot voters, they're going to have something right in the ballot packet to notify them that there is a change. For voters who are going to the polls, we will conduct a separate type of educational process. We'll be working to do social media education. We will be trying to send out mailers to voters.
We're urging them to look, when the sample ballots are up on my website, to familiarize themselves with that. We're also doing an educational video early next week, and that will be available on the website, and it'll be available to various Democratic clubs, as well as Republican clubs, if they want to see it.
Can you confidently say that all 47 of those ballots will be accurate, will be scanned correctly?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been involved in national elections, and the percentage of fraud, despite what you hear, is less than 1%. My people proof the ballot not once, but several times. We proof it in English, and we proof it in Spanish.
Now it's up to you to proof your ballot to make sure you know how to vote on June 4th. In Union, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
There's a growing rift between county leaders and a watchdog group that holds them accountable. The association representing New Jersey's 21 counties this week sent a letter to lawmakers urging them to investigate the Office of the State Comptroller after the office issued recent reports that exposed waste and misconduct in three counties. As senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports, the request comes as the legislature is already facing scrutiny for attempts at scaling back transparency.
The comptroller here is acting as judge, prosecutor, and jury all in one.
John Donadio lobbies for Jersey's 21 county governments, who he claims have, quote, had it with New Jersey's acting state comptroller, Kevin Walsh. The counties want lawmakers to put a short leash on the independent watchdog. They really dislike his YouTube clips.
Did you know the Office of the State Comptroller audits and investigates New Jersey's local governments? And when we do, we often find staggering waste. A big reason why? The chief financial officer is not doing their job.
I think their reports and their press releases are disingenuous representation of the facts and circumstances.
Walsh recently issued several damning reports pointing out alleged fraud and misuse of taxpayer dollars in Union, Hudson, and Essex counties. But they vigorously disputed some of the comptroller's findings. In a letter to legislative leaders, Donadio claimed Walsh attempts to evoke fear in the minds of viewers that fraud, waste, and abuse is everywhere, and that public financial officers are primarily responsible. He asks lawmakers to investigate the investigator and mandate guardrails so counties can fully rebut accusations.
We'd like for the legislature to conduct a hearing on the Office of the State Comptroller. We are alarmed at the fact that the comptroller has the authority to levy accusations of wrongdoing when there are disputes of facts and legal matters without due process of the law.
If the legislature has any questions about any of the reports that we've issued, including the ones that the counties are now upset about, we welcome the chance to fully engage on that. I fully stand behind the facts that are in there and the conclusions that we reached.
Walsh freely acknowledges local governments often get it right, but adds it's not his job to award gold stars.
We share the facts because it's good for democracy for the public to understand where government has fallen down.
They have the power to investigate, and they do it well. And they have an incredibly wonderful track record of identifying corruption and misuse of public funds.
Government transparency advocates say the comptroller doesn't prosecute, he just reports. They see this as pushback by county politicians eager to bite the watchdog back, but they warn Grassroots New Jersey just dumped the county line ballot, and polls show folks also oppose measures to roll back the Open Public Records Act. They urged read the room.
Certainly, if the legislature does pick up that recommendation, they will get massive resistance from this movement, this pro-democracy movement. It will be massive.
Senate President Nick Scutari told us, I can confirm receipt of the letter, and we will give it a full review. He's also the sole sponsor of S-2270, a bill that would create a governor-appointed chief accountability officer, basically a watchdog to supervise all state ombudsmen and comptrollers. That could elicit some howls of protest. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report tonight, the start date to New York's congestion pricing plan is revealed. The new toll goes into effect on June 30th for anyone driving into Midtown Manhattan south of 60th Street. That's despite ongoing legal challenges from New Jersey and New York's outer boroughs. The plan will charge a base rate of $15 a day for passenger cars. Trucks, buses, and other large vehicles will be charged a higher rate. The MTA touted the fee as a way to cut down on traffic and pollution in the city's busy central business district, but also to help raise $1 billion for the beleaguered transportation agency. Households making less than $50,000 a year and other exempt drivers can start applying for a discount. The Murphy administration is still seeking to block the plan in federal court, arguing it'll cause more traffic and environmental harm to North Jersey residents. The state's also fighting for a portion of the revenue, but it's still unclear how much the MTA has agreed to share. Well, the state is wrapping up Earth Week with a massive new solar project. New Jersey's getting more than $156 million from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's Solar for All competition to expand community solar efforts. That'll give low-income, disadvantaged neighborhoods access to the clean energy and the benefits it brings. The governor today touted the money during an event in Ocean County where a former landfill was closed, capped, and turned into a solar field that'll provide power to roughly 1,600 homes. The Murphy administration says the new federal funding will enable grid upgrades, more residential solar ownership, and community partnerships. It'll also deliver about 175 megawatts of energy to more than 20,000 homes in the state. The Solar for All Award is also expected to help New Jersey meet its goal of reducing emissions by 80% in the next 30 years.
And at a time when global temperatures are rising at an unsustainable and unprecedented pace, we need to work even faster and even harder. And in that spirit today, I'm thrilled to announce that this year, with the help of solar projects just like this one, New Jersey, for the first time ever, will exceed 5 gigawatts or 5,000 megawatts of installed solar capacity. That is a big deal. To put that in perspective, that is enough energy to power more than 750,000 homes throughout all of New Jersey.
Negotiations are taking place right now for Newark airport workers who are part of the union 32BJ SEIU. This week, the members invited U.S. Senate candidate and Congressman Andy Kim to tour their workspaces and talk about their push for higher pay. Right now, union airport employees earn about $19 an hour, but they're looking for a bump to $25. Workers are also asking for paid time off, which isn't currently part of their compensation. Their jobs run the gamut from sky caps and wheelchair attendants to baggage handlers and terminal cleaners. In 2023, 32BJ airport workers secured the nation's highest mandated minimum wage of $19 an hour after making the case for their essential role during the pandemic. But employees told Andy Kim this week that still isn't a living wage.
We want to make sure that people, when they're doing and working hard at their jobs, that they're able to earn an income that they're able to support themselves and their family on. And there's a lot of challenges with increased transportation costs, housing costs, and other things like that. You know, that's something that I'm hearing from the workers here, and want to make sure that we are thinking through how do we help people be able to afford the kind of quality of life that we want to see everybody have access to.
issue here in New Jersey.
Turning to Wall Street, stocks jumped today thanks to strong tech earnings. Here's how the markets closed for the week. And make sure to tune in to NJ Business Beat with Raven Santana this weekend. She focuses on New Jersey's construction industry, talking to the CEO of a woman-owned company about the challenges she faced in a male-dominated field and how it motivated her. Then how more students are choosing a skilled trade over college, which could help fill up gap of 500,000 construction workers in the U.S. Watch it Saturday at 5 p.m. and Sunday morning at 9:30 on NJ PBS. And that does it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together. And New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com.
Our future relies on more than clean energy. Our future relies on empowered communities, the health and safety of our families and neighbors, of our schools and streets. The PSEG Foundation is committed to sustainability, equity, and economic empowerment, investing in parks, helping towns go green, supporting civic centers, scholarships, and workforce development that strengthen our community.